The Jacksonville Jaguars select Mason Smith, defensive tackle, LSU.
When you look at him, Joel, and you're looking at trying to build out your defensive front, and you bring over Eric Armstead, who's huge. We know about Trayvon Walker and what a physical freak he was as the first overall pick. They've got some rare dudes now just in terms of the size, length, and athleticism up front.
Rolls away from pressure, in trouble. Just throws it up for grabs, and it is intercepted. Jarian Jones picked it off. Caitlin Robinson on the return. There he goes. Robinson inside the 40. They finally get a chance. Everybody breaks the tackle, and Robinson looking back at the defender. Touchdown, Texas. 95-yard return.
With the 114th pick in the 2024 NFL Draft, the Jacksonville Jaguars select Javon Foster, tackle, Missouri. Duval!
1010XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, and Dylan Denmark.
All right, good morning, everybody. Our boy Stevie getting a little love there, Tony. Irish Jag with Javon Foster. Love it. Hope you're doing well over there across the pond, brother. All right, so the Jaguars work for this draft is done, for better or worse. And today, we're going to break it all down. Because we know exactly how it's going to turn out, right, Tony? We know how the careers of all these players will turn out, good, bad, or otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
Of course we don't, right? But we're going to critique it anyway, because that's what we do, right? Yeah. As sports fans, analysts, whatever, we all have our opinions. And we do say, it does come with a caveat. We don't know how these players are going to turn out, right?
No idea, really.
Who's the player that most people are most excited about in this draft? Brian Thomas, probably,
no doubt,
right? I mean, because he's the first-round pick. You're most conditioned to know the most about him. You gave up the most to get him. You'd been talked about as a top 15-ish type player in this draft, top 20-type player, depending on the list you looked at. So, yeah, people are excited. Does that mean Brian Thomas is going to be any good? No.
No.
Brian Thomas may be really good.
No, it means there's plenty of reason to be excited about Brian Thomas.
Absolutely, right? Yeah. And, you know, there are reasons to be excited about some of the other players. There are reasons to scratch your head on some of these picks as well. And, look, I'll say this, and I'm not going to change anybody's opinion on this. I don't believe, anyway. You know, there's a lot of talk about the consensus rankings. This guy went somewhere in the consensus rankings, and therefore Trent Baalke is reaching on players. You don't know how other teams are evaluating these players.
No.
Right? You just don't. And I looked up, for instance, like I tweeted out, as the third round was coming to a close, I just got off the air on Friday night, and I said, oh, TJ Tampa. Here's a name, you know, I'm familiar with. He's high up on these cornerback lists. How about TJ Tampa for this selection, right? And they go with Jarian Jones. And I start looking at the profile, and Jarian Jones really excelled in man coverage.
Yep.
They have an idea that he's going to be their nickel or compete to be the nickel right away. And as I looked at it, maybe I felt that, okay, maybe the Jags didn't feel like Tampa was as good a fit in this scheme. He played off the ball, even though the scouting reports all tell you that he had the ability, they think, to play man, but he didn't do a ton of it, right, Tone? So I looked at Dane Brugler. We all respect Dane Brugler in the business, right? He puts out for The Athletic his draft guide he calls The Beast every year. It's a big, impressive compendium of every prospect you can imagine in there. He had TJ Tampa as a second-round pick. Many people did. Many people mocked him to the Jags with the 48th pick, right? Mm-hmm. So when he's sitting there in the third, you're going, well, damn, this is great value. Well, then he goes late in the fourth round after numerous other cornerbacks came off the board. And so what happened with Renardo Green? Renardo Green, in Dane Brugler's book, The Beast, is a fourth-round pick.
Mm-hmm.
Talked about him in our top five list last week. Boy, I hope they can get him at 96. He went in the second round.
Yeah.
The NFL tells you that for all the great work you do, and it helps educate us all, you know, we're not spending, you know, however many hours a week like Dane Brugler poring over film on these guys. We're better educated than we could be. That doesn't mean that they're going to agree with NFL scouts. Sometimes Brugler's going to be right. Sometimes he's going to be wrong. Sometimes the scouts are going to be right. Sometimes they're going to be wrong. Sometimes what looks like a reach will turn out to be a great value, and other times it'll look foolish in hindsight.
Well, and all of these discussions, or most of these discussions, take place without taking into account all of the factors that go into making a draft pick, right? It's when is our next pick? do we think we can get this guy when we pick next, right? If it is a guy that you really like, even if you're like, well, it's probably about a half round early right now for this guy, but what is the drop off at this position beyond this guy? We really like this guy at this spot. If that's the direction we have to go, and they say, all right, so it's a round early, no big deal, right? Like, that's, I think that happens in NFL draft rooms a lot. And then people react to it going, why are you reaching this far for that kind of player? It's like, well, they didn't pick again for two rounds, right? Like, those kind of things are, they make an impact on where players are selected in the NFL draft. And I think a lot of times it's why, you know, when you hear Balky a couple weeks ago before the draft talking about, we'll see what happens once we get to 12, 13, then we'll know what our board looks like. It's because you can't know. You know, you don't know Atlanta's going to go quarterback. You can't know that, right? So when it's happening in real time, that's when you adjust. And by the way, it probably explains why it was difficult for Indianapolis and Jacksonville to trade into the top 10. If someone up there is looking at quarterback.
That, right. You're going to have to pay a quarterback premium to get off. There were reportedly a bunch of teams trying to move up that weren't able to. Now, granted, people will say, Trent Baalke can't move up. He didn't. And I know he did try to move up at various times. But there were a lot of teams that said, we tried to move here, we tried to move there, we weren't able to do it. Here's an example of value, okay? Pittsburgh Steelers, Roman Wilson, right? They take him in the third round, okay? They were all set to take him with the 51st pick in the draft. And then Zach Frazier, a guy they didn't expect to be there, the center out of West Virginia, was available. Well, we got to take him, right? Got him rated higher. We just didn't think he'd be here. They were all set to take Roman Wilson at, like, pick 51. They got him at, like, pick 84. If they had taken him at 51, you know what people would have said? Oh, Pittsburgh knows what they're doing, drafting receivers after the first round, right? Yeah. Great value here. No, they would have reached for him a full round more than any other team was willing to pay at minimum. So you just don't know. Like, Mason Smith, was he a reach or would he have been off the board the next five picks? Hard to say. There was a bit of a run on defensive tackle to open up the second night. Ruka Rororo goes to the Falcons. Johnny Newton goes to Washington. Tavondre Sweat. I mean, Tennessee's got to be the only team that bumps a guy up the board for a DUI. Am I wrong? Seriously. Right? Like, he was like middle of the second round, and then he gets a DWI, and then we're wondering, can the Jags get him in the fourth round?
Yeah.
Right? And they got him at pick 38. Nice job. Braden Fisk goes one pick later. So if Mason Smith's your guy, you don't know if you're Trent Baalke and the Jags. By the way, they were fist pumping about that. Mm-hmm. That, like, I look at him and Tone, I get it. It's unfulfilled promise, right? Coming off an injury, it's a big projection. Well, there's a guy, if he hits his projection.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got first round upside. There's no question about it. Will he hit it? I don't know. You know, but he does have a lot of versatility. I think he can play in a lot of different spots on that defensive line. They dipped in twice to the LSU defensive line, and a number of people have pointed out, well, they were terrible against the run last year. We're getting a couple of defensive tackles from this team. It was terrible against the run. So my answer to that was, first of all, I'm not guaranteeing that these guys are going to be good, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a fair question to ask. But I looked at who is the worst team in the National Football League defensively last year. Wasn't sure, so I looked it up. It's the Commanders.
Okay.
You know what the Commanders have? They have Daron Payne, and they have Jonathan Allen, who in the last 3 years have combined to go to three Pro Bowls, okay? Are they bad players because they played on the worst defense in the league? Or are they good players that were on a bad defense because, you know what I mean? For a number of reasons, like at that specific same position. So just because you're coming off of a bad defense doesn't mean that you are necessarily a bad player.
No, it's not a team sport.
Absolutely. So look, it is fair to question. And
no doubt,
we've got Tyler Natuno from USA Today's group that covers the LSU Tigers going to join us next hour. He actually lives in Jax, but figured with three LSU Tigers, let's get a little bit more of the lowdown on exactly what Jacksonville was getting in Mason Smith and Jordan Jefferson in particular. But today we welcome all these guys to the Jaguars and hope they turn out to be really good down the line. I'll say this. They did hit the needs. Right, and they may not have done it the way you want it. What about we didn't get enough pass rush, didn't get enough edge? Again, you had a list of like five needs. They double-tapped corner. Mm-hmm. They double-tapped defensive tackle. Mm-hmm. So you're not going to get everything you want in every single draft. You can question the running back selection, which I think is purely a kick return selection. Yeah. I mean, purely for kick return. And people said, well, we got Duvernay now. I totally get it. Yeah, that people are questioning this, but what people are saying is with this new way things are going to be set up with the kickoffs, plenty of teams are going to try to use two return men at the same time.
Yeah.
So is this a value? I don't know. You know, I have no idea. Could you have gotten him in the sixth round or the seventh round? We have no way of knowing, right? Did you have enough return options anyway, even beyond this, with Tank Bigsby and Parker Washington? I think that's a fair question.
Right, and if there was another guy on the board there in the fifth round that you would have preferred, fine.
Absolutely.
You know, like, I totally get it. But I didn't – my reaction to them drafting Keelan Robinson wasn't anything more than, all right, kick returner.
Yeah, that's kind of like – I felt like at that point in the draft, there was a lot of talk that this is kind of a five-round draft, right? Like, if you didn't love anybody that you thought could eventually one day work his way into being a significant rotation piece for you, and you may disagree with that characterization, by the way, as a listener out there, you may say, well, they could have this guy, they could have that guy. Maybe they consider. I'm sure they considered all those guys.
Yeah.
And they were aware of who they could have had, and they wanted these guys. So we'll find out if that's right.
And the next thought I had was Parker Washington better be ready to show some real value, right, going into year number two.
Oh, to make this team.
To make the 53 between Robinson and Parker. And I think that's the decision they're going to be making, is which of those guys is going to be the guy for them that can be the other return guy, right? That's going to be a big part of it. And injury changes that calculus on which guy you want active potentially on this roster. But I think Parker, whose position on this team was already very much in question, is even more in question after they draft basically a pure kick returner there in the fifth round.
No doubt about it, right? I mean, I don't see him ever. I mean, he didn't get any rushing reps at Texas. I don't think he's going to all of a sudden get him in the National Football League.
Probably
is
not
my guess. Cam Little's not a huge-legged kicker, Tony, but I wonder with the de-emphasis on needing a booming leg on kickoffs, it's actually a penalty now. Again, it's penalizing to kick it into the end zone. You want to kick it short of the end zone now.
It's to get a return.
Will NFL teams start to prioritize accuracy over the big leg? I don't know. Mm-hmm. You know, Joey Sly does have a pretty big leg. This is a competition. I don't think Cam Little's guaranteed to be the Jags kicker. He gets a little bit of extra equity being a draft pick because they have invested in him. And we'll find out about some of these other guys in here as well. So today, we invite your feedback, good or bad, or somewhere in the middle. Maybe you don't know exactly what your reaction to this is. And what I did, I put out a poll yesterday, Tony, just to give people a chance. Who, not everybody wants to write up a paragraph about how they feel about all the picks, and that is totally fine.
Sure.
So just asked you yesterday, and that's still out there. It's still good. I retweeted it this morning. What's your overall feeling? How do you feel overall about what the team did during the NFL draft? Love it? Like it? Meh, not sure. Or the last category, I lumped them together, don't like it or hate it. Okay, so if you clearly do not like it, you're in that category, no matter how strongly you feel about that. If you're kind of in the middle class, if you're kind of like, all right, I can see, I do like it, but I love it maybe a little bit strong. Anyway, those are the options in the poll. And today's official Chad and Sandy Real Estate question today, just asking you for your reaction to the draft, and you can get as expansive on that as you would like on social media. Hit us up at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and at 1010XL Denmark.
Go Tigers.
Pockets, go Tigers. That's right. That's a good one. I like that, man. How's your weekend, Pockets?
Yeah, it was good, man. We had our district track meet. I got a lot of boys and girls going to regionals next week, and from there we go to state.
All right. So. Well, congrats. Keep soldiering on. Keep moving forward, man. That's awesome. Today we invite you, Duval, to weigh in on your newest class of Jacksonville Jaguars at 641-1010 on the All-Pro Roofing phone lines or on the text line. Designed by Lifetime Enclosures. You can hit us up in the YouTube chat today. And I already gave out those Twitter or X handles, so I think we've got it mostly covered at this point. Mm-hmm. We want to hear from you. Today is about your reaction. We talked about guys. We'll give you our opinion as we go along about these guys. And generally, I like the positions they hit. I'm not sure if they didn't reach on a few of these guys as well. But again, as I laid out, just when you think we can get this guy around later, all it takes is one other team. So if you love that guy, I will say this, Tone, with a new defensive coordinator, with a new scheme coming in, I got to believe that he was heavily relied on. And with a linebackers coach that was LSU's defensive coordinator,
right.
I got to believe he was heavily relied on in the evaluation process as well. So let's talk Jaguar draft class when we return in a moment with Tony Smith and Dylan Denmark. I'm Mike Dempsey on Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
Yeah, I just got to say, I got this one, Tony, on Twitter a moment ago from our good friend Al Stewart out there. My man started Awaken 180 on February 2nd.
Yeah.
And has lost 51.6 pounds.
Dang.
Nice. Al,
him and Hack are neck and neck.
That is awesome, brother. Mm-hmm. He's 6'2", went from 281 to 230. That is phenomenal.
Go get
lost
it, Al.
Six yeah. pant sizes. I'm telling you, it works, man. He's just raving about it. That's our guy, Al. Happy for you, brother. Happy for you, no doubt. All right, today it's about your reaction to the Jacksonville Jaguars draft class. Tony, I saw one critique. Man, I look at this guy, Jordan Jefferson. All he looks like is a run stuffer, not much else. Yeah,
a nose.
That's what he is.
Yeah.
That's what they hope he is, a guy that they can eventually plug in and gum up the works. Right there in the middle of the defensive line. You know, I got to say, I'm intrigued by watching interviews with Mason Smith and Jarian Jones. These guys look like they got that great football makeup.
They do.
You know what I mean? Like, they both want to eat it, sleep it, drink it. If you're not aware, Jarian Jones talked about how he grew up just in love with every carry of MJD when he played for the Jags.
Yeah.
And that Jalen Ramsey came, it took it even to a higher level. But MJD was his guy for years and couldn't believe. I mean, you don't get many of these players coming up going, man, Jags were my jam, you know, as a kid. And that's awesome. I love it. You know, and he comes right down the road. So he's going to have a ton of support. Heard a lot of Duvalls at his draft gathering with the video. So love that stuff, man. I root for all these guys, you know. Didn't know a whole lot about Javon Foster, Tony. Pretty intriguing guy. Some people have said, why didn't they go interior as opposed to tackle? Well, look at the tackle contracts, right? I mean, you know, they certainly could have gone interior, but I think they're looking at it now. For better or worse, as of today, you got Sheriff and Ezra Cleveland. You brought Shatley back. You want to find out what you have in Cooper Hodges. That they just, you know, didn't see an immediate. Put it this way. I'm not saying they wouldn't have drafted an interior lineman at any point in the draft. It just wasn't the priority at any point that they were up there. And I think they did want to get a developmental tackle in there. Who, at worst, if Javon Foster turns out to be their swing tackle in the future, that's a good pick in the fourth round.
Yeah. And look, your two tackles there that are going to be gone potentially after this season, they're both scheduled to be free agents in Cam Robinson and Walker Little. So it makes sense that if they were going to address tackle or guard at that point in the draft, that tackle was the one that would make more sense, right? It doesn't mean that they can't re-sign one of those guys, but at least at guard, you mentioned all the names, so they're at least interested in seeing how these guys develop. Now, if you were one of the fans that was very much in favor of they should have drafted one of those interior guys in the first or second round, that's the way they should have done it, then nothing they could have done would have made you happy unless they drafted a guard in the first or second round. And that's okay. But
That's your prerogative.
Right, but that doesn't mean that their plan was a bad plan just because it doesn't happen to agree with your plan.
We're not, by the way, saying it's a good plan.
No.
You have to have – it's a plan that can work, but you have to have picked the right players.
It was a lot of the – we had so much of the discussion about the first round, and, you know, I said it on Friday. There wasn't going to be a very good chance that I was going to complain about whatever they did in the first round because of the options they had and the directions I thought that they could go. And I feel that way about all the offensive line stuff throughout the rest of the draft. I would have been very much in favor of them drafting an interior offensive lineman somewhere in the first four rounds. Cool, I'm for it. If they didn't, okay. Why didn't they? Oh, they did this and that. Okay. Like, I can understand all of the reasons why they did what they did, but I can understand also that there are fans out there that are like, the interior of our line stinks. Why didn't they do something about it? Well, they did what they did, right? There's only so much that you can do. You only have so many picks. They addressed interior defensive line very heavily. obviously, in this draft. I think they drafted a guy that I really think Jefferson has a chance to be maybe even the starting nose for this football team on a team that doesn't have a natural nose tackle on it right now. Not one in front of him. Devon Hamilton may be the guy that's being paid the most to be kind of at that position, but I agree with Tommy Mack and have for a couple of years now. I think Devon's a better three technique than he is a nose tackle. I just don't think that's his natural position in the league, and I look at Jefferson and say, that's a nose.
That is all Jefferson appears to be.
Right.
Which is fine, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what you drafted him to be.
And I'm cool with that being addressed in the fourth round of the draft. Good.
By the way, going to be different opinion. We're going to get to the lines here momentarily. I just want to read three in a row that I've gotten in Twitter. I'll put them in order of most positive to least positive.
Okay.
Got all these within about a two-minute span. First one. This draft, light years better than the last one. That's pretty positive.
Mm-hmm.
Next one, lots of potential. Hopefully it gets developed properly. Kind of wait and see.
Yep.
And then the next one, Clown Balky is back with a gif of somebody vomiting or at least, gagging.
Yeah.
So, it runs the gamut.
That guy disagrees with the draft.
It runs the gamut.
That's all right.
All right. Let's go to the lines for the first time today, post-2024 NFL draft at 641-1010. And our good friend Byron in Gainesville is in early to lead things off. What's up, Byron?
Duval!
Duval! So tell us, Byron, your thoughts.
Yeah, guys, I tell you what. Ever since Trevor, I guess it's 3 years ago, and that's when I started calling the show. So maybe I'm a homer, but guys, I think Balky been doing a decent job. You know, let me get to my point here. You know, all these teams from Kansas City to us have been drafting these guys from Rutgers or any, NC Tech or whatever, and they developed them. So I said this the other day, guys. I think that we got the team there. It's a tough league. It's going to be, games are won by just the small turnovers and errors. But I do believe we have the right defense now, coaches, and we got the right coach in there to develop these players. Guys, I'm excited. I'm ready. Man, and the guy you were talking about from Florida State, I seen some of the watch party in Mississippi, and these guys are ready to come in here and play. Hey, guys, I'm telling you, we going to do it this year. I believe we're going to get back in there, man. I'm excited, guys. I've been gone for a few minutes, but I'm back. Hey, Duval!
Byron, I need you, buddy. I need you out there, Byron. Thank you. I need to know Byron is out there pumped up. Look, I guarantee you, this is Byron talking, okay? Byron's a super fan. He is excited, as he said. I'm probably a little bit biased, right? Whatever. Or I'm wearing teal-colored glasses. I guarantee you people are going to say, Dempsey and Smith, they told us, you got to love this class. This class is phenomenal. Balky did a great job. I think he did. Look, I thought the first round was phenomenal, right? And there are some players I like in this draft. But in the end, let's see how it all plays out. I had more people telling me last year, oh, you wait and see. Yasir Abdullah, he's going to be the guy. I think that is a case people sometimes just look.
They needed him to be the guy.
We need him to be the guy. And so you start projecting it that you hope it turns out that way. These guys, long way off from making a contribution to this football team. Tony is also in Gainesville. He's next up here on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Tony.
How y'all doing, man?
Okay, man. What's up?
Okay, I'm going to make this quick. Two quick points. One, I don't have a problem with the class only for the simple fact that these guys don't necessarily have to be thrust into that, that starting lineup. And I feel like with different coaches, new coaching, that's what's giving me the optimism that maybe, that they can learn behind them guys for a year and contribute enough to, justify the value what we picked them at. And the second thing is, we go back to what y'all was saying earlier, I think a lot of people just kind of get caught up in the number beside the name when the player is drafted. Because when I listen to some people talk, if a guy doesn't have a first round or second round by him, they automatically think that these players are just garbage. But most of these guys that go late in the draft be first team, second team, ACC, SEC, All-Americans and stuff like that. And with that, I'm going to take my comments off the line.
All right, Tony, appreciate it. A case in point, Javon Foster is the first team All-SEC left tackle, okay? Now, granted, you look into the scouting report, there's a lot of, try hard in there. You know what I mean? Like he has some limitations, but he somehow manages to get the job done. You know, he's not that pristine prospect where he's great at this, he's great at this. He runs the most amazing three-cone drill and all these things. Tony, he's a guy that just is effective and got the job done and played at a high level of competition. But that's a great point what Tony's making. Like, Javon Foster, man, he's the whatever, the 15th tackle off the board or whatever he is. He was the first team all-SEC tackle. Yeah. That's a pretty good league. They throw the football in the SEC. You know, so I'm not guaranteeing that Javon Foster is better than anyone taken ahead of him or after him. But that's a good example. All these guys have excelled at a high level. And the LSU thing with the coaching. Okay, again, Ryan Nielsen's bringing in a scheme that we hope is going to make better use of what we've got here. But, you know, Matt House is the Jags' inside linebackers coach, spent the last 2 years as the defensive coordinator at LSU. And you can go, well, they didn't have a very good defense. But that doesn't mean he can't coach inside linebackers. And it also doesn't mean that he doesn't have insight into Mason Smith, Tony, and he doesn't have insight into Jordan Jefferson and, you know, were they victims of their circumstance? Were they bright lights in an otherwise dismal defensive line showing? Were they, you know, whatever the case may be. So, I mean, look, he wants to improve his prospects. Not like Matt House is not trying to make this football team better. So I would suspect that he gave ringing endorsements on both of those players, or the Jags wouldn't have selected them where they did.
Yeah, I can meet fans who are wishing to be pessimistic to this degree with what they did in the first four rounds, I'll say. Once you get past the fifth, sixth, seventh round, I just, you know, we talked to enough people that talked about the depth of the talent in this class.
It was an awful draft.
Right. It's why you draft a kicker and a kick returner, right? Like, there's a reason those are picks that are made in the fifth and sixth round by the Jaguars, I think. But in the first five picks that they make, I can meet the fans that are, what are they doing with Mason Smith? At least to some degree, right? Because that is a player that was a super highly recruited player when he wound up at LSU. But he did deal with injuries his freshman and sophomore year. Major injuries, right? Both those years. And he played pretty well last year. And, you know, you can hear from him where he's saying, I finally felt healthy at the end of last year. And I do look at that and I think, why did he declare for the draft? And then he goes in the second round. And it's like, oh, okay.
NFL people were telling him.
Right. It worked out pretty well for Mason.
Yeah.
Right? But it is the guy that when I saw it and looked into it, I was like, whoa, this is a bit odd. But I think, obviously, the Jags are picking him because they see what the ceiling could be.
Hey, look, I had him on my list of five guys last week.
Yeah.
I said, give me one of those defensive tackles. But I thought he was going to fall because of the injury concerns, right?
Right.
And that's kind of the cycle of getting sucked up into the mock drafts and the projections of, this is where this guy is slotted, and you're like, okay, well, this is what they're saying. Then all of a sudden, you know, Tavondre Sweat's going to go in the fourth or fifth round after that DWI. He goes 38th overall. Who knows who might have taken Mason Smith, but you make the point earlier about, you know, you have so many picks. You're sitting there at 48. All those picks that have gone by, you're getting your second player there. Another full 48 are coming off before your next selection, you know. And this is a guy I really, again, Trent Baalke's reaction to this, this guy was the guy for that. Now, I know they, you know, the word is they tried to trade up, and they tried to trade back into the first round. I'm guessing that was for a corner, right? I think they did try to move up for a certain level of corner, and when the price may have been too much, then they said, all right, we're going to stand pat, and we're going to pivot to another good player. We like some corners in the middle rounds. For instance, Green Bay dropped from 41 to 45 in the draft, right? And what they picked up for that two-spot slide, I think was a fifth and a sixth rounder, okay? So the Jags are at 48, right? So the team, I forget who it was. It might have been whoever it was that came up from 45 to 41, gave them a fifth and a sixth, okay? So if you're the Jags and you're coming up from 48, you're trying to get higher than 41, you're giving up a bunch of your late capital. Now, I'm not saying you wouldn't have been okay with that, but the shot they took on Javon Foster at offensive tackle. Maybe you don't have that pick anymore.
Maybe
you don't have that defensive tackle. Maybe you can't get another corner in this draft. Now, it may have been worth it. It may have been more worth it to do it and go that way. We'll never know. But it's not like you can just snap your fingers and go, well, here's what the chart says. I can give you this value and that team's going to take it. Depends on what's on the board, what they want, who else is offering, and you know, what they think is going to be available at the 48th pick. So,
yeah,
look, not making excuses. It's just a reality of the world they live in. The bottom line is they tried to trade up. They didn't.
Yeah, and coming out of a draft last year where Ventrell Miller was a fourth-round pick that we both come in here that Monday after the draft going,
Why?
On earth?
Right.
Like, it just doesn't make any sense. Like, none of this is that. It's not even close to that kind of level for me. My eyebrows went up when I saw Mason was the pick. Jarian, love it. Right? And they started giving you the stats on that guy. It's like, guy hadn't allowed a touchdown in 2 years.
Him,
it's
right.
Like, let's go.
Say that again. Has not allowed a touchdown in 2 years.
Absolutely.
And had one of the highest man coverage grades in college football last year.
Like, as soon as they did it, and they show you all that, it's like, yeah, this is what I'm talking about. Like, I was super excited about Jarian Jones from the moment they made that pick. I can see why they would pick a guy like Javon Foster. I get it. Jordan Jefferson. You know, I didn't watch LSU football enough to have a big opinion on the guys that are playing interior defensive line for LSU. My questions about Mason are about injuries in two of his first 3 years. But the ceiling on that guy, you could see it. It's why he was the level of the kind of a recruit he was. And he did play pretty well last year when everything was said and done. And his best football was at the end of his junior year. Like, I look at all those things, and he says, that's when I finally started feeling healthy. It's like, okay, let's see a lot more of that guy, because I do think he gives them something on the inside.
Do you think I'm crazy that I look at how he moves and think he can occasionally play DN for you on this team? I mean, no. I really think I'm not saying that's you're going to play a 315-pounder there full-time, but I think he's going to be a guy that they can slide all over the place.
Sure.
Like, they have I think they think they got – ultimately a steal in Mason Smith. Now, whether they're
right. I know why they would feel that way.
That's how they feel.
And I get why people would be nervous about the pick on the other side of it. I get both sides of that one.
Before we break, let's get our friend Regina up next here in Mandarin. Good morning, Regina.
Good morning. Happy Monday.
I'm with you.
We have to wait and see. But the 2 points I want to make, we weren't privy to, number one, what their schemes are thinking, you know, from the standpoint of the new defensive coordinator, or, you know, what's going on with the offensive coordination, you know, who's play calling. The other thing is, you know, I listened to the post draft videos on YouTube, and it seemed like they talked about this culture fitting in. And Shad Khan has memories of the toxic environment that Jalen Ramsey and Yannick Ngakoue made in the locker room. So I'm wondering, you know, part of, and I'll take your comments off the air, if they were looking for a personality of somebody in particular to not have that kind of environment.
Sure.
Have a good one.
Thank you, Regina.
Go Jags.
Go Jaguars. Bye-bye. Right. No matter what, no matter how we feel about any pick, or, you know, excited, disappointed, anything in between, whatever, let's all hope we're all hoping for the same outcome, right?
We'll
Let's hope that we're hoping.
The good plays they make, no doubt.
Let's hold that thought, Regina, because we got to get a break in here. We'll come back and we'll discuss the character issue of how they're trying to build their locker room and football team. We'll take more of your calls as well at 641-1010. It's Reaction Monday to the 2024 NFL Draft for the Jacksonville Jaguars here on Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
All right, just a quick thought on what Regina called in about, Tony, about the character building aspect of the roster. And then we'll get right back to your calls here at 641-1010 on the All-Pro Roofing phone lines. You don't want to go overboard to the point where you take a clearly inferior player who just loves ball. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, there's a mix. You've got to have a self-sustaining locker room. You've got to reach a critical mass where you can bring in a guy who's got a little bit of a turd tendency to him, and he will be washed through the cycle.
Yeah.
Because you've got enough veterans and leaders and good players in that locker room that are going to get him in line quickly. What happens is, if some of your good players are like that, then they're seen as me first guys. Hey, I played great, you know, or whatever. Or
the room can fracture.
Where's my? And we saw it happen. And you're right about that. But it's so, I'll say this, like, and again, I'm just throwing numbers out there. Let's say your scale is a 100-point scale, and I rate a guy a 71, and I got a guy who's a 70 or 69 or 68 or whatever. It's really close. But the guy who's rated 70 just eats, sleeps, and drinks it. You know what I mean? Like, he is that guy, that overachiever, that super hard worker. Yeah, I'm going to bump that guy up a little bit, and I'm going to feel safer about bringing him in, man. And I do think that I was really struck by that on day two, with Mason Smith and Jarian Jones. Yeah. You know, those guys being just exuding that kind of attitude. So we'll find out. They got to be good ball players, though, right? I mean, we can all be rah-rah for the team. We got to be able to play. You know, that's got to be first and foremost. But, there's a fine line. Trent Baalke in his career has taken chances on some guys. Every GM probably takes chances on some guys. Eventually, yeah. Gene Smith said, we're going to try this Justin Blackman fellow out here. He's got some red flags. We're going to try him. And it blew up in his face, you know. But
yeah,
at the time, we wanted him to take a few more chances, I think.
Yeah, I don't think you have to be buttoned down to be super successful, right? The team that Doug Peterson coached to a Super Bowl, those guys in that locker room were wild, right? Like their attitudes when they were dealing with the media, it was fun to watch because they were so aggressive, right? With the way that they handled all of that stuff. But on the field, there was no disconnect between any of those guys. Like the locker room worked so well. So you can have a bunch of guys that are a little bit wild. Like, it's not that everyone has to be in line.
Right. Like, you don't need all choir boys, but they have to hold each other accountable.
They have to be willing. The team still has to come first. And if you find a group of guys that the team is the thing that everyone's focused on, things can go really well for you. And, look, we've talked enough about culture in the NFL. What that means is you win.
Yes, you're right, because if you win, everyone goes, oh, they overcame it, or they don't even, the stories don't even get out when you're
and
winning.
And when you lose, that's when the fractures show up.
Yes, like
the people who
there were signs.
Yeah, the people that have a tendency to be a little bit more loud about the, well, it's not my fault, those people get the opportunity to have their voice heard.
Yeah.
When the team's not doing well, when it's going really well, you know, like everyone kind of tells that guy to settle down, Buck. You know, like that kind of, it's like, come on, man, we're winning. What's your problem?
Right.
We're winning. Right, and that carries a lot of weight when you are winning. When you're not winning, anyone saying, "Come on, man!" Like the team.
Right, there's
no
nothing backs that up.
That ain't me.
Yeah,
you know. So that's how you get a good locker room. You win.
All right, let's get to the phone call reactions from you as the Jaguars draft has concluded. Carson in Fruit Cove is up next. Good morning, Carson.
Hey, good morning. Hey, my call kind of plays into what y'all were just talking about I guess the type of characters you're bringing into the building. I saw on Saturday, Mia O'Brien tweeted out a video of Jefferson, the fourth-round pick, getting, I'm not going to say beat, but after a one-on-one drill at the Senior Bowl, ripped the player's helmet off and just threw it. And all of the Jags fans around there just slandering him, crucifying that pick. But I think about the Bucs game last year, the video that went viral of their offensive lineman that was mic'd up, pushing our guys around, telling Chaseon and Smoot how much they sucked, how bad they were, pointing up at the scoreboard, pointing their fingers in their face. So I'm thinking, it's nice. It's going to be nice to have somebody that gets a little fiery, I mean, gets a little angry, because we didn't see any of that last season. I feel like now not saying we're mean or we're better because of it, but I just think now we kind of got some chippy guys that, hey, you're not going to be doing that to us. You're not going to be taunting us, and you're not going to be telling them how much they suck. I don't know. I just kind of want to take y'all's comments on that.
Yeah, sure. All right, thank you, Carson. I appreciate it. That video clip, and that Tyler Natuna is the one who put it out there. Mm-hmm. Right, that's kind of how he got on my radar with that, and he's going to join us coming up at 11:20 to talk about this, covering LSU. It was a rep, Tony, where Jefferson was going up against the center, and I don't know. You know, a lot of people said, oh, he got beat in that rep, right? Well, he kind of pushed the center back towards the quarterback. You know, defensive tackle, nose tackle types are not shedding that guy, you know, and giving him the swim move a whole lot. So I don't honestly know how if they judge that a win or a loss when you push the guy back into the quarterback's lap, but he didn't allow you to get to the quarterback. So anyway, he got frustrated with something that was happening during the rep, and he did rip the guy's helmet off and sling it or whatever. And some people looked at that and said, well, look at that great emotional immaturity and all that. And you could look in a big moment. Don't get us wrong. It's third down. You're getting off the field and you rip somebody's helmet off and pick up a 15-yard penalty.
We saw Trayvon have a couple of those his rookie year.
You can't have that. Yeah. Right. But I do agree that at a certain point, you can't have a team that just gets bullied and pushed around. And there needs to be, like, again, when we say football character, that doesn't mean we're all sitting there with our hands folded on our desks and yes sir, no sir, every second of the day. Like you say, you can have swag. You can have attitude. you just got to be about doing the right things to not put your team in a bad situation off the field, on the field. You're, you know, dedicated to your studying your craft and doing what it takes to make you maximize your potential. Doesn't mean you're going to be a superstar player, but are you doing your part to make sure you're getting the most out of you? Not everybody does that. Some guys do get that money, and all of a sudden they're like, hey, you can't tell me anything, man. You know, I'm set for life.
You know, I get it with the team they had last year compared to the one they had 2 years ago, because I did feel like the combination of Rayshon and Arden Key, like those were kind of the attitude guys, right, on the defensive side of the ball. Well, they lost one of those before last season. He wasn't there anymore, and no one really picked up that part of it. You know, like the attitude kind of guy on the field. They didn't have that guy necessarily. I think Josh Allen is a fantastic football player. He's not that.
I agree.
Right? Like, that's not how he carries himself, and I don't need him to fake it.
Not everyone needs to be that guy.
Right. Like, you just be you. But there is something to having that kind of guy. Like, on the offensive side of the ball, when they don't have Cam Robinson on the field, you can feel it. Right? Because he is the guy that's going to come peel you off the pile, and he is the guy that's going to get that insane block against the defensive back and let him know, yeah, you're going to try to get in my way. I weigh 200 pounds more than you. Let's try that again. You know, that's fun. Right, watching Cam do those kinds of things. They don't have a bunch of guys that do that kind of thing, but it's fun when you have a couple of those guys, and it certainly looks like they may have drafted one that can add a little bit of that to the defensive side of the ball. Hopefully, he's a player on top of that,
right?
Because he's...
Well, that's the thing. You can have all the attitude in the world. You better be a player first, right? Like, you can't just be playing three snaps a game and acting like you're...
At least going to have the opportunity to be the nose is what it looks like for him. And so bring that attitude. We need more of it.
Let's go to Ben in Nocatee next up. Good morning, Ben.
Hey, good morning. So, yeah, I do like that pick, the receiver pick. You know, I would have gone Mims, the healthy O-line. I think that's where we need the most help at. I mean, Trevor's got to have the time in order to throw the ball so he doesn't underthrow it to our receivers. If 10-10 were to make the pick, who would you guys have picked the first round, first, you know, 17th pick or whatever? What would you guys have picked?
I would have taken – we said it last week. We said it for a while. I would have taken Troy Faletonu, but Brian Thomas was second on my list. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I would have preferred offensive line there, not the guy you wanted. And, see, that's part of it too. Like, everyone wants their own guy. Marius Mims. And not that Ben said that's the only offensive lineman.
No.
I get why they didn't. I would have gone that route as well and maybe look for receiver help later in the draft because there was. But again, if you look for receiver help later in the draft, are you not getting defensive line help? Are you not getting corner help? You know, are we waiting even longer to draft corner? I don't know the answer to these things. I do like the fact that no matter who they took in the first round, next year they're going to have an additional third and fourth round pick at their disposal, and they picked up an extra player this year because of it. So, yeah, I would have gone Faletonu, but I'm not at all upset. My goal all along is have a target-rich environment at 17, which they did, and trade back and add extra draft capital, which they did, and still get one of those elite players, which, in my opinion, they did. So
I'm with you. I probably would have gone Faletonu in that situation on Thursday, but, you know, no matter how many callers want to call in and say, what would you have done, it makes me no less excited about Brian Thomas Jr.
Yeah.
And what I think he can add to this offense.
We've had him near the top of our list for months.
Right. Like, you're not going to convince me to be any less excited than I am about Brian Thomas Jr. I'm thrilled that guy is on the way here and what he could potentially add to an offense that desperately needs somebody that can take the top off the defense and is so good winning those one-on-one matchups and all the athleticism that he adds to that room. You can see pretty easily him winding up being a number one wide receiver in very short order here in Jacksonville. No, I'm not going to be
not your number one going into next year. Then you probably need to question that pick. The opportunity is right there.
It's right there for him. And I'm all kinds of excited that Trevor Lawrence has somebody that has the ability to take the top off the defense and win one-on-one.
Which, by the way, I think he'll be a starter in three receiver sets this year.
Too.
I think he and Gabe Davis will be on the outside and Kirk will be in the slot. But in terms of being your unquestioned top of the depth chart guy, I feel like it's reasonable to give him a year to feel that way. But I want to feel that way at this time next year as we're going, okay, dust has settled. Jags have won the Lombardi. Well, what about next year, right? We feel pretty good that we got a number one wide receiver. I hope that's where We are. Ben, thank you for the call. Let's go to Kyle in Cincinnati before we hit the break. Kyle, you're next up on Jaguars Today. Go ahead.
Good morning, guys.
Thanks morning.
For taking my call.
Yes, sir.
So I just wanted to say I am super psyched about the first two picks. Brian Thomas Jr., he runs like a gazelle. He's smooth in and out of his routes. And then it's really weird when you, like, really fall in love with prospects, and then when your team actually drafts them, it fires me up. And I love the fact that Trent Baalke and Chuck Peterson are, like, they are both on the same page with everything that they want. I think that's what kind of led Trent Baalke out of 49ers organization. And I love that we're investing in interior defensive line so we can get after C.J. Stroud, Anthony Richardson, and making Will Levis eat his own, you know, whatever. But I am ready for this season. I'm fired up.
Duval. All right, Kyle. We appreciate you, buddy. Breaking up a little bit there. But, okay, he's like he feels like the Jags brain trust is all on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they are. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not hearing a ton of, although from some corners, Trent Baalke's just trying to show he's the smartest guy in the room again. You know, look, almost can't win at this point if you're Trent, right? I mean,
it's the draft is a gift that keeps on giving.
Tony, LSU, LSU, FSU, LSU, Missouri, yeah. Ole Miss. He's going SEC and the Florida State defense that was outstanding last year. He's the opposite of Gene Smith. Right? I mean, I did get one guy who tweeted me, said, I'm very happy because this assures us we'll have a new GM next year. I'm like, you know what? At this point, it's just funny. Yeah. I will do this for one person. First one that wants in on this. This is probably not allowed. So I'll okay. Say I would have been willing to do this, but the bosses probably wouldn't like it. I'd bet you $1,000 right now that Trent Baalke's the GM of the Jags a year from today.
I'm not touching that.
Right? I mean, come on. I give you odds, but I'm not a bookie. All right? So as somebody pointed out on Friday, and it's a good point, if a GM feels shaky about his job security, he's a hell of a guy if he's trading for future draft capital, right? Because
he's
most
doing
of them
the
are
job,
like,
yeah.
I need it now to protect me. And that is not how he operated here. So
nope.
We'll see. Anyway, I just hope he picked really good players this time around, right?
Yeah.
Why you care? I don't care who the GM of the Jaguars is. I don't care if it's Trent Baalke. I don't care if it's Joe Blow. Doesn't matter to me. Absolutely not. Just win. I don't care if they have no GM. I don't care. You know, the Patriots didn't have an offensive coordinator. Of course, that didn't work out very well for them.
No, it did not.
Either. All right. Hour two is upon us. We'll talk a little deeper about LSU and those prospects the Jags picked up in about 25 minutes. Time for you to get in before then at 641-1010 on the All-Pro Roofing phone lines or the text line designed by Lifetime Enclosures. This is Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Everything you need to know about the Jags. Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
All right, Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, and Dylan Denmark here with you, Jaguars Today. And finally, we're through it. The draft. We know who the players are.
Mm-hmm.
You're thrilled. You're curious. You're disappointed. You're angry. You're whatever you are. It's okay. Feel the way you want to feel. Tyler Natuno is going to join us. He's the managing editor of LSU Tigers Wire, which is part of the USA Today Sports Media Group. That's coming up in the next segment, and for obvious reasons. We're now like LSU East, I suppose, here on the First Coast. Let's get a couple calls in the meantime. Next up at 641-1010 is Larry in Orange Park. Good morning, Larry.
Good morning. I think the first round draft pick, I think we nailed. But after that, LSU's run defense was like 91st.
Mm-hmm.
After that, I would have liked to seen us package the 2, 3, and 4 and move up 8 spots and get the number 40 that Philadelphia Eagles took. I think he would have been a bona fide starter, and I think you've got to get at least 2 starters out of this draft. I mean, our number 2 pick from last year can't even get on the field.
Yeah, that's true. He hadn't, and he wasn't going to be a starter anyway, the guy they picked last year. Brenton Strange, but I will say this, no matter how good or bad the pick of Brenton Strange was, doesn't make Mason Smith a bad pick. Like, I think Mason Smith, their goal is, their vision is eventually, of course, he's going to be a starter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's like, I think that Baalke, I'm not trying to make him – Henderson and Stroud were top 15 picks each, right? But I think that's what he envisions him, like, being an anchor to his defensive line for years to come here in Jacksonville. Like, they got a guy. Jarian Jones could be your starting nickel right out of the gates. Now,
certainly could.
It's not the same as being, you know, an outside corner. I get it. And, look, that's how you feel, and that's fine. I don't think the Jags would have had any interest in giving you 2, 3, and 4 to move up 8 spots. But and I don't think it would have cost that much. But, you know, let's say they didn't. And, you know, in that situation, they've got what you describe as a bona fide starter. Was that the Cooper DeJean pick right there?
It's one of those corners.
That's who I'm guessing it was at that point in time. I don't have let me see if I can
– I know that's who the Eagles took.
Yeah, at 40.
Yeah.
Was that who they took at 40? Yes, yeah. Cooper DeJean, right? So, okay, you could have had Cooper DeJean, right? Now, if you've given up 2, 3, and 4, you're giving up the defensive tackle you drafted. You get Cooper DeJean, but you don't have the nickel that you drafted, and you don't have the offensive tackle that you drafted. And maybe in your mind, you know, it could turn out that those three players, it's worth it. And it could also turn out, which, by the way, didn't Philly trade up to that spot? So you would have had to outpay what Philadelphia paid to make that move. Was that the one where they gave a second-round pick next year?
I don't remember.
No, that was the Rams doing that. Rams came up from 52 to 39 and gave up a second-round pick next year to do it. I got to see what they paid to make that move, honestly. I'll go back and look. But, hey, Larry, we appreciate the call and the feedback. And you might be right. That might have been the better use of resources. We'll find out in time. Steve in Melbourne up next. Good morning, Steve.
Hey, good morning, guys.
What's up?
I feel the same way as you, Mike. I think a lot of this, a lot of the players here, especially Mason Smith, had a good rookie season, and I think some of these picks are based on, hey, I know they have a lot of potential. I want my new defensive coordinator that specializes in D-line, got a lot out of the New Orleans defensive line, improved Atlanta with less talent to unlock the potential that these guys have inside them. And honestly, with I think he did pretty good. I think Mason Smith has a lot of upside, kind of like Trayvon. And I honestly, when I looked at our final pick with Miles Cole, I mean, we got him at 213. He was ranked 147. I like the value in that, and I've seen some tape on him. And I think there's a lot of untapped potential in him as well for the big human being that he is on the edge. But, I mean, honestly, I like some of the picks. The kick returner at the time was kind of like a head-scratcher, but I can kind of see it with hearing some teams might have two returners on this new kickoff rule. But otherwise, I see some upside with a lot of these picks. So I'm happy, and we'll see within the next couple of years how it all turns out.
Okay. Thank you, Steve. Appreciate it. You know, pretty reasonable response. Again, maybe Steve should be angry, and that might be the right reaction. We don't know, right? But it may turn out to be the right one. I'm not saying anybody who feels that way, your feelings are invalid. By the way, looking at the deal, the Eagles moved up from 50 to 40, okay? And they also gave up 53 in the deal. Now, they got back 78 and 152, right? So they moved from 50 to 40. They dropped from 53 to 78, which, you know, pretty sizable drop there from the middle of the second into the third round. I don't know exactly where it came out on the total value of the deal, but, you know, you look at it, if you're the Commanders, and this is a trade in the division, if the Jags are coming up, okay, we only have to drop to 48 in the deal, but the next pick we're going to get is 96. In the deal they got with the Eagles, they got 50 and 53. So they moved back from 40, but now all of a sudden they got two picks in the next 13. So I don't know if the Jags could have put together a package that would have beaten that offer for Cooper DeJean.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. Depending on – that all depends on what the Commanders are valuing and what they're getting back. So anyway, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Let's get a couple more quick ones in before we talk about these LSU prospects a little bit deeper. Matt in Ponte Vedra next up. What's up, Matt?
What's up, guys? I'm ready to come get my jersey this week. Anyways, here's the breakdown. I'm an LSU fan. I'm big on this draft. The breakdown on Mason Smith is this. Before his injury, he was going to be a top 10 NFL draft pick going into that year. And the key is not his physicalness. It's going to be is he motivated to become a great player in the NFL? And that's going to be the key. And if he is, and if he, we've got some coaches in there that can get him thinking that way, and some other veteran players in there, they can get him thinking that way. I really like this move. I really do. Justin Jefferson, FYI, great character guy. He really is. I don't know. He probably won't start, but he's a great team guy. And I think the Jags, throughout their draft, looked for a bunch of those guys with that offensive lineman. I think he was a team captain somewhere also. So I like the draft. I'm all real right. Fired up about Brian Thomas. Have a good day, guys.
All right, thank you, Matt. You could headline that. LSU fan happy Jaguars selected three LSU players. So I'm going to say that most of the people listening are taking that with a major grain of salt. All right, so look, you may be right, and it could also be that you watched them closer than a lot of us did, and therefore, you know, particularly like you said, Tony, even if you're watching LSU every week, are you honing in on defensive tackle anytime you watch football?
No.
Right? I'm not, like, as, you know, I'm not breaking down film like that anyway. So Mason Smith did say he was excited. This is the team that he wanted to draft him, so, you know, he had an idea that this could be a landing spot for him throughout the process. Sean in Texas, last word before we hit the break. What's up, Sean?
Hey, man. No one's talking about this draft being deja vu excitement. We haven't spent any – as a whole, I love this draft that we haven't spent any first-round picks on a quarterback or a running back. Oh, when I see BTJ, I think Jimmy Smith. When I see the two D-line from LSU, I think about the Twin Towers 2.0 with – John Henderson and Marcus Stroud and the kicker, Mike Hollis, Josh Scobie, and the kick returner, Jamal Agnew. And at the very end, that guy's measurables reminds me of Javon Kearse. And to have one draft, to have so many SEC players that actually played against each other, even FSU guy. So the wide receiver versus the cornerbacks, the D-line versus the O-line, they all played against each other. I think that's exciting.
All right. Well, hey, I'm sure the Jags excited. Are happy that you're excited. I'm going to say this about the seventh round pick who I knew next to nothing about before the selection, Miles Cole out of Texas Tech. The overwhelming odds, in my opinion, are he never plays at all for the Jags.
Yeah.
He's a seventh round pick in a bad draft. Right now, Miles Cole, welcome to Jacksonville. Go out there and prove me wrong. But
he's got some measurables that explain why he would be drafted.
Right. Exciting measurables, and that's fine, taking a chance. I have no issue with the selection.
Not at all.
Right? 6'6", 280 in the seventh round, edge rusher. We need some depth there. But I think maybe the best case potential for him this year, Tony, is end of the roster or practice squad development, and we'll see where he turns into in a year.
Whatever it is that occasionally clicks for a guy, right, when they show up somewhere and you're like, what? Where did this come from, right? Like, I would love for that to be what that turns into, right? I don't expect it. But if it does, it's like, let's, you know, celebrate for however many years he's around to do that kind of thing for you, right? It's all gravy. Whatever he can give you on the football field, it's all well beyond what your expectations should be.
And, Matt, be excited, right? But I think Matt's looking at almost the best-case scenario for each of these guys, and that's
no doubt,
right?
Yeah.
Look, fans are going to fan, and we hear it every year, right? And that's fine. And you may be right, again, and I have no issue. I love the fact that they dipped into the SEC and Florida State as much as they did. Some pretty high-profile programs with some really good players generally. Let's find out more because this is a fair question. This team in LSU was so bad against the run. What are we doing drafting two of their defensive tackles? Tyler Natuno, the managing editor of LSU Tigers Wire for USA Today, joins us next to discuss those prospects as well as Brian Thomas Jr. That's straight ahead on Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Let's ring up another guest on the All-Pro Roofing phone line.
Jaguars Today
on 1010XL.
Well, Trent Baalke certainly had the eye for the Tigers throughout the NFL draft this year.
No doubt.
I mean, that's not even – that's on the ground. That's not even hanging that fruit right there, Tony. But the Jags select Brian Thomas Jr. in round one after a trade down. They select his teammate Mason Smith with the 48th selection. And as if that were not enough, with 116, they go with another LSU defensive lineman in Jordan Jefferson. And here to talk about it with us, Tyler Natuno. joins us. He's the managing editor of LSU Tigers Wire for USA Today Sports Media Group. Good morning, Tyler. How you doing, bud?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on. I'm happy to be here.
All right, well, we're happy to have you. Tyler, by the way, is based here in Jacksonville as well. So you have that going for you. All right. Fair question a lot of people have asked. LSU's defense, not any good, couldn't stop the run. What are we doing drafting two defensive tackles from a team that couldn't stop the run? Tyler, what is your response?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a fair, you know, criticism. I mean, I think, you know, first of all, the fact that Matt House is in the building, the new, you know, linebackers coach, was the defensive coordinator there last year. You know, say what you will about him, but the connection there, I think, makes a lot of sense in terms of why they've targeted those guys. But, I mean, looking beyond it, I don't think the interior of the defensive line was the biggest problem on the team last year. You know, I think they had a lot of other issues in terms of, you know, using players like Harold Perkins, who will probably be, you know, a big name in next year's draft. You know, issues in the secondary as well. Like, I think they had issues defensively that went beyond that. But, I mean, it's, you know, it's a fair criticism, you know, considering the issues these guys had. And the fact that, you know, neither of the defensive players they took from LSU were absurdly productive last year.
1 year of massive production. That's one of the things we've heard about Brian Thomas Jr. going through the draft process. Playing as the number two to Malik Nabers as the one there with LSU. Again, those are the most common criticisms that we heard about Thomas throughout the process. I didn't share those concerns myself, but now he's here. How would you answer fans who may have voiced those concerns?
Yeah, I mean, I think you just got to understand with Brian Thomas Jr., the room that he's been in the last 3 years, you know, all the talent there, you know, splitting targets with a guy like Malik Nabers, you know, who is LSU's all-time leading receiver. And in spite of that, Brian Thomas still had, you know, an 1,100-yard season this year, really broke out, led the FBS in receiving touchdowns with 17. So really managed to kind of, you know, be a threat even with Malik Nabers there, I would say. I mean, I think it's something we've heard about a lot with him, but I think his best football is still ahead of him. You know, a guy that really is still developing as a route runner, but, you know, managed to really break out this year and demonstrate why he can be so dangerous. So I think, you know, I wouldn't read too much into the fact that it took him, you know, till year three to get that kind of production, just because it took him until year three to kind of get that sort of usage in the offense that would allow for it.
Let's talk about Mason Smith here a little bit, right? And this is, for some, a classic Trent Baalke selection, a guy with all the measurables, maybe not the production, but he sees a vision for how it can all come together with a high ceiling. Injuries certainly are part of the story for Mason Smith, but Tyler, at his best, what kind of player do you think he showed to be at LSU?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you go back and look at especially his true freshman tape from back in 2021, you know, he played a lot of significant reps as an interior defensive lineman, true freshman in the SEC, which is not an easy thing to do. And a lot of, you know, showed a lot of really encouraging things there. Obviously had the torn ACL in his season opener in 22. And then, you know, he said coming back through it this year, you know, that he said after the draft that he didn't really feel like he was at 100% until late in the year. And that sort of tracks, I think, with watching him play this season. I think was a little bit slow to get back and figure things out a bit. I think another guy who, you know, his best football is probably still ahead of him, just considering how much his college career was derailed by injuries. But I mean, you go back and look at the tape from his freshman year. I mean, you know, you talked about, you know, the traits, the athleticism. I mean, he, you know, is a guy that is versatile. They ran him off the edge sometimes too. So I think can do a lot. I think you like his potential as a pass rusher, you know, lining up on the inside. I just think, you know, there is some development that needs to be there just because he only played in, I think, 22 games in college.
How surprised were you, if you were, that Mason Smith entered this year's NFL draft after only being able to play in those 8 games in his first 2 seasons at LSU?
Pretty surprised, to be honest with you. I think that was a shared opinion from a lot of people sort of around LSU. I think that, you know, a lot of people saw him as a guy that had the potential to maybe become a first round prospect, you know, if he had that season in college where he could put it all together. And I think people thought that he might come back and do that. I mean, obviously he made, you know, the right decision, ended up getting drafted on day two. So, you know, I think he probably saw, you know, the grades that, you know, you saw that NFL guys like Baalke, you know, really like the ability and the potential with him. So it makes sense to me, but at the time I was certainly a little bit surprised to see it.
I'm talking here with Tyler Natuno, who covers LSU for USA Today Sports Media Group. Tyler, you got on the radar, at least your LSU opinions with me, when you tweeted about Jordan Jefferson with a rep at the Senior Bowl. You know the one I'm talking about, where he rips the guy's helmet off, right? You said, wow, Jack's getting a real dog. And a lot of people jumped on that and said, here's a guy who lost a rep and threw a hissy fit. Okay, let's not characterize him simply by one rep one way or the other. Let's take that one out of existence in its entirety. What are the Jaguars getting in Jefferson?
Yeah, just on that real quick. You know, that was just a clip I remembered making the rounds during the Senior Bowl. And I just, when they drafted him, I you know, threw that tweet out there, didn't really think anything of it. And it really took off. A lot of people had opinions on that. I mean, yeah, that rep is not, you know, defining of Jordan Jefferson. I think, you know, a guy that I think there are some questions about him. You know, he was a starter in 2022 at West Virginia, transfers into LSU, ends up being mostly a rotational guy to begin the year, starts down the stretch due to injury. Not the most productive. I mean, I think he's not a guy that's going to light up the stat sheet. I think his impact is more, you know, getting penetration, you know, in the interior and stopping the run. I think probably still a project guy in that regard, but, you know, I think he has the potential to develop into maybe, you know, a sort of true nose tackle for this team if he hits his potential. I think he's more of a project, though, than Mason Smith is, certainly. You know, a guy that I'm a little bit surprised to see how early he went. You know, looking at his projections before the draft, it seemed like he had more like a sixth round grade. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think I can understand why they took him where they did. I just don't know how ready he is to be an impactful NFL player on day one.
LSU has had obviously a ton of success sending wide receivers to the NFL, right? The list is long, and recently, you know, it's gotten deep. But Brian Thomas Jr. coming here to Jacksonville, where do you think Thomas ranks among the wide receivers that have been drafted out of LSU, say, in the last 5 or 6 years?
I mean, that's a tough one because it's a very good list. I mean, you know, obviously you've got guys like Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase. I mean, they're kind of in a tier of their own. I think Neighbors certainly has the potential to be like one of those guys. I mean, I'd put Brian Thomas sort of right there as kind of the next guy up after those guys. I mean, I think unlike them has, you know, areas in his game that need to be developed. I mean, like I said earlier, not the most developed route tree, was kind of more of a deep threat guy at LSU. And I think he could do that very well in the NFL on day one. I just, you know, if he's going to develop into a true number one receiver, probably needs to become a more polished route runner. But I mean, I think, you know, you can see the potential. I mean, he's 6'3", has, you know, turned in one of the best combines we've seen in recent years from a receiver. Like, the potential is all there. The ability is all there. So, I mean, I think he has the potential to be, you know, as good as a lot of those guys have been.
All right, let's just ask your thoughts, if we could, on Jaden Daniels and what kind of transition you think he'll make to the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, I was a little bit surprised through the process how kind of universally Jaden Daniels became, you know, QB2 in the minds of what seemed like every team. I mean, I think that the vision is pretty obvious with Jaden Daniels. I mean, the ability is very impressive. What he can do with his legs, you know, his arm, I think is enticing, you know, when you look at, especially at offense, like under Cliff Kingsbury. But I do have questions about him. I think he needs to get, you know, be a little bit smarter in terms of like field awareness and not taking hits when he runs. You know, he kind of had a tendency to, you know, get lit up by a linebacker and then, you know, fumble and ragdoll, like that kind of thing, you know, will get him into trouble in the NFL. But I, you know, the vision is clear. Like, I think if he hits, he's going to be a really, really fun player to watch.
All right, Tyler, we appreciate a look at these LSU Tigers. We may be calling you a lot more frequently in the future because it looks like these guys hopefully will be around for a long time. But you can check out Tyler on social media at his name, Tyler Natuno, Nettuno, as the managing editor of LSU Tigers Wire for USA Today Sports Media Group. We appreciate the visit this morning, Tyler. All the best.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
All right, buddy. You got it. All right. There you go. I'm just looking back at an old scouting report on Mason Smith. Maybe it's like a combination. It's going a story kind of going back over where he has been throughout his process. And,
sure,
you know, it starts out there was a time he was viewed as the potential defensive tackle one of this class, you know, and when he was coming out. And has he fulfilled that promise? Well, obviously not. He didn't go as the defensive tackle one in this class. But this is – you talk about upside. You listen to some of the strengths in his scouting report. Okay, now, a little flowery language here, but first bullet point. Nuclear power plant with hyper-elite length, lean mass, and 7-foot wingspan. Next one, hyper-explosive defensive lineman with an elite first step, gap-obliterating momentum generation, okay? Amped-up mover with searing lateral burst energy and the ability to execute spins with combined explosiveness, length, and frame density has elite raw power capacity. I mean, basically what they're saying is if you're going to pour the mold for an athlete to play defensive tackle who can generate power and quickness, this is the guy you've drawn up.
Yeah.
Now play like it, right? I mean, okay, this is in part on Trent Baalke drafting a guy who's not fulfilled that potential yet, but also that he's doing that in conjunction with a head coach and a coaching staff that is responsible for saying, yep, we think he fits what we're going to do, and we're going to get that out of him. Will they? We'll find out, won't we?
Yes, we will.
As it goes along. If you want to get in, we still have time. And guess what? If you don't get in today, I doubt this is the last time we talk about the 2024 NFL draft. Yeah. This week, pretty much every day, we'll have some focus on that, and we'll certainly be getting some of our correspondents in from around Jacksonville that we relied on heavily throughout the process, like Demetrius Harvey and John Shipley and Mike DiRocco, to weigh in on their thoughts on what they did, as well as some of the national pundits like Tony Pauline and Chad Ryder joining us as well a little bit later on in the week or the next couple of weeks. So if you want to get in, still time, it's 641-1010, the Chad and Sandy Real Estate Question of the Day, simply asking you for your reaction to the Jaguars draft haul this year. This is 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
This is Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
Yeah, those other teams made picks too and did things this weekend. So while we've spent all morning talking about what the Jags have done in the draft, and we will not stop talking about it for a good long time, Tony Smith right now is going to take you around the rest of the NFL.
Now, Gems Around the NFL, brought to you by Beach's Jewelry and Pawn in Jack's Beach.
Free agent wide receiver Jarvis Landry, now 31 years old, who last played for New Orleans in 2022, will be working out for the Jaguars at their rookie minicamp. The New England Patriots and defensive tackle Christian Barmore have agreed to a four-year deal with a maximum value of $92 million. The Dallas Cowboys and running back Ezekiel Elliott have agreed to terms to reunite, with the only remaining step being a physical that Zeke is expected to pass. Houston wide receiver Tank Dell sustained minor wounds during a shooting that saw Dell along with nine other event attendees at Cabana Live in Seminole County injured just after midnight on Saturday going into Sunday. All 10 of the victims, including Dell, suffered non-life-threatening injuries. Dell has already been released from the hospital. He's in good spirits, according to a statement from the Texans. The shooter, 16 years old, is reported to have opened fire after a verbal altercation escalated. He was arrested on site and booked into a juvenile detention center after voters voted down a sales tax measure that would have helped to fund major renovations to Arrowhead in Kansas City and a new baseball park for the Kansas City Royals. Chiefs Chairman Clark Hunt said that they would look at options beyond renovating the stadium, which could include building a new stadium. Hunt pointed out that their lease at Arrowhead expires after the 2030 season.
All right, there you go. And they're putting squeeze on him there. Jarvis Landry's situation is crazy, right? I mean, we just mentioned him because we were talking about LSU receivers at the end of the week last week. And then to see that he's actually going to be here. I was a little surprised to see he's only 31 years old at this point. But a couple of things here. One, didn't play last year. Year before, he had 272 yards, right? So it's been a while since he's been productive. He was never, like, the super high-end yards per catch guy. He's a big volume receiver. He's a reliable guy who could get open out of the slot and catch a bunch of passes to the point where in 2015 and 2017, he caught 110 and 112 respectively. That's a long time ago.
Yeah.
You know, I just don't see it. All right, let's say Jarvis Landry's on this team. Does he play on game day? You know, does he have a special teams role? I don't see it.
Yeah.
I don't think he deposes Zay Jones.
No.
So if he doesn't do that, Duvernay is going to be active because he's your return guy.
Yeah, because what he does is what Christian Kirk
absolutely
does, right? And you're certainly not taking Kirk
not
off
as well,
the field,
right,
yeah, at this point for Landry. Like, it's fine. You bring him in, take
sure
a look at it, see if he's still got something there, but I wouldn't expect much out of it.
There's no harm in doing it, and, you know, he did go to LSU, so he fits right in.
Yes, he does.
In Jacksonville, FLA. All right, let me see if I can. Let me bring up – I think the poll is interesting. I'm honestly a little surprised – Jaguar fans have been as positive about this draft class because, mm-hmm, you know, maybe it's just goes to show you that it is the angry vocal minority that, you know, disparages everything that they do. I don't think it's a perfect draft by any stretch of imagination. I'm not going to tell you it's an A or even a B plus. Is it a B? Is it a B minus? It's probably somewhere in there for me. And because for one thing, they added the value of adding the extra picks. Right, and you could say, "Well, Balky's not going to do anything with those picks." They have intrinsic value, regardless of whether you think Trent Baalke's good at making selections or not. Those picks are worth something, and mm-hmm, if Minnesota's not that great this year, they could be worth a considerable amount. How much would you have liked to have like the 70th pick in the draft this year?
Yeah, right?
It's supposed to be a better draft next year, by the way.
Yeah.
They have Minnesota's third and fourth rounders next year.
I do love that as a criticism for Baalke, right? That he stinks at making these picks. Why is he making these trades? So the guy that you think is really bad at making picks,
you
having more of those picks
chances
to spend,
right,
like it's like your logic doesn't make much sense there. I get it. You don't like him. That's what you're saying. You don't like Baalke, so whatever he does, you're going to explain to us why it was actually a bad move.
Mm-hmm.
And they did. You know, we had a bunch of that on Friday from some people. Like, why would they make this trade back? And the ones that were doing that were like, well, he stinks at making those picks.
I feel like there were less people on Friday. I feel it's very hard. Now, granted,
I think the whole Baalke hate thing is quieter today than it has been in a long time.
I think it is as well. But I do think the main criticism Friday that I heard repeated was, you took a second tier or the fourth best receiver when you could have had a first tier or the number one corner. Okay, that was the number one thing. Again, the 10th receiver could be better than the best corner in a given class.
Yeah.
You know, just because you're number one at your position, should we have taken the number one running back? As well, should Jonathan Brooks should be a Jaguar then, because mm-hmm, they could have had the number one running back, would have been a better pick. Like, I get it. Now, then you say, well, I'm talking about positions of need and this and that. It's you could have had the number two defensive tackle in this draft if you wanted to. And instead, they ended up with like the seventh or whatever, you know, in terms of the order they came off the
board. There's different values at different positions for different guys. You know, it's a lesson you learn. I know we talk a lot of fantasy football, but it's a lesson you learn when you're playing fantasy football.
Don't draft the quarterback in the first round.
Right. Like, I get it. You might be able to get the best quarterback in the first round after 10 receivers have come off the board, like all that kind of, you might be able to do that, but you're not getting any value
right
at that spot because their value
the
in your
game. The 12th quarterback is going to be closer to the number one.
Right.
Yeah,
and the NFL, it's the value in the entire league for the game. Right. And so if you're looking at evaluating all the wide receivers, yeah, there's a very real possibility that the fourth best wide receiver you have graded is better than any corner that would be available to you in a given draft. And I think this year, I don't even think that was a particularly hard argument to make necessarily. I thought they were very even in my mind with Brian Thomas Jr. in any of the top corners, right? It was all in the same spot in my mind. You know, so them choosing to go wide receiver is not them blowing it because they didn't take a corner. I never felt that way for a moment.
Look, if Brian Thomas had come off the board in those picks, which was a risk.
It was.
You don't know. And they had taken Terrion Arnold. I've been like, great, fantastic. And then guess what? Instead of taking Jarian Jones, maybe they're taking something else.
Absolutely.
There. Or this is possible as well. Maybe, and again, I'm not saying this is definitively how they feel or that I would agree with it or that you should agree with it. But it's possible they look and they go, for this year, I'm not talking about for the long term because we all understand the contract situations with like Tyson Campbell's in the last year of his deal. Maybe they just feel Ronald Darby is pretty good, you know, mm-hmm, and that if he stays healthy and we're not going to predict that he gets hurt, that he's going to be better than you think, that he fits very well here. So maybe they think that, and with Jarian Jones and with some of the other options. And oh, by the way, overthecap.com has him with the third most cap space in the National Football League. I tweeted out yesterday, does anyone have Xavier Howard's phone number? I mean, he's out there. He's talked about wanting to maybe go play for the Texans. Hey, no, how about come play for us? He's not the guy he was a few years ago, I don't think. But at the time, he was one of the top handful of cover men in the league, man-to-man cover men in the league. Now, I don't know what he's looking for, and I would imagine he'd be looking for a starting spot guaranteed to him coming in. So that could be something that's not even on their radar. But if there are veterans that are lingering out there, it's like the Dallas Cowboys knew in their back pocket they could sign Ezekiel Elliott. That's not as good necessarily as drafting Jonathan Brooks. But if you draft Jonathan Brooks and you don't take the other guy that you got there and on and on and on, so you do what you can, and not every position you're going to get the player of your ultimate desire at. So we'll see how it works out if they still are able to add anything in the veteran cornerback room. But, yeah, I think Ronald Darby's health is a major concerning question mark for this team.
It's at least something you got to think about.
Well, it's been his one of the issues with him throughout his career.
Yeah, it's one of those where I don't assume he's going to play 17 games.
I don't think you can, no.
Right. So whatever that means, that doesn't mean he's got to miss 15.
No, but when he's out there, I think Ronald Darby's a really good player.
I agree.
Question is, how consistently will we have him? You know, will it be in and out? Will he be nicked up? Will he be practicing half the time? I don't know. I don't know the answer. Or will he stay completely healthy for that matter? Let me just look at the games played for him in the last several years, because it doesn't even matter what start. He played 16 games last year, so he did stay healthy. Played 5 the year before that. Played 11 the year before that.
Mm-hmm.
Played 16 in 2020. But the 3 years previous, 11, 9, and 8. So, you know, he's had issues. He's had, let's see, out of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 seasons, his top 5 game seasons, he's played 16 twice, he's played 15 and 14 and 11. I mean, there's a lot of seasons where, you know, he's missing at least a third of the year, if not half the season.
Yeah.
You know? Let's hope that's not one of the cases this time around. He started 7 games, played 16 last year, so he missed one, right? I think we would take his availability for 16 games this time. It's going to be one of the key factors to this team because they're still pretty thin back there, at least with proven talent. You know, I hope they made the right choices. I do like the Jarian Jones pick, and I do think he slots in there well at nickel, and he has some outside experience, so in a pinch, he could probably do that as well. But I think they drafted their future nickel starter. That is what he is going to be for this football team. Do they have enough at the outside spots? Time will tell. Deontre Prince has traits, Tone. You know, he kind of went where he was expected to go. He was not any highly touted guy, but he's a 6-foot guy who can run. And he did play in the SEC. So can they develop him? That's part of the process, too. Let's get the raw material in a draft that generally was not seen as strong as some other ones. You take a shot on some guys with traits and hope that your coaching staff gets the best out of
them. Well, you can see on their depth chart, right? In 2022, they took Gregory Jr. in the 6th round.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, they took Christian Braswell in the 6th round. Eric Hallett in the 6th round, right? Like, they've been willing to the back end of the draft to do something to address what they're doing in the secondary. How that's going to work out long term, and a guy like Deontre Prince fits that perfectly. He's another one of those types of guys that you hope it hits, right? Like, that's what you're drafting for at that point is, man, I hope this turns into something. Because if it does, the value of having a guy that can get to a second contract even. You know, Daniel Thomas, they spent a 5th-round pick on in 2020.
Been an outstanding value.
Right. And so that guy doesn't have to be the starting safety for him to have been a really good value in the 5th round. For the franchise. So hopefully you find one of those guys in the last couple of rounds, 3 rounds of this year's draft.
And by the way, we said it before about, you know, taking a running back in this year's draft with obviously from the profile, they really took a kick returner. There were a number of those picks on Saturday, right? Like in the 5th and 6th round where you looked at the guy and you're like, why is this team? Oh, okay. And again, you can say to yourself, wait a minute, didn't we get an all-pro return man? Yes, you did. But I don't think any of us, as we sit here today, know exactly what's going to happen with the new kickoff rule. And as we've said it a number of times, there's a school of thought that the best way to play this is going to be with 2 return guys back there. And that everybody else is going to be up, you know, with that 5-yard gap. And because teams are going to try to, obviously, they have to force returns. They don't want to kick into the end zone. So you're going to want to try to kick it away from your primary guy a lot of occasions. So if he can make the team, if he makes the team and is active on game day, it's probably a good pick. at that point in the draft. Mm-hmm. Could they have done better? Possibly so. I'm sure there are going to be players drafted after him that'll turn out to be better.
And I don't know, you know, with him and, you know, Parker Washington, who I mentioned off mm-hmm. the top of the show, as that does feel like those two competing for one kind of roster spot to me, potentially for this Jaguars team. I don't know how much either of those guys play special teams outside of straight return, right? And I do think that will have a big impact on whether or not they can be active on game day. You know, it's Duvernay is going to be active on game day because he can be your fourth, fifth, whatever wide receiver and the primary return guy for you, right? You only need one punt returner on game day, but you might need two guys that can return a kick every now and then if that's the way the Jaguars want to do it. There's the potential for that to happen. It's hard to have a guy active on game day because he's our second kick returner.
I agree.
Right? Like, they got to be able to do something else. And there's the potential for Parker Washington and Robinson at their position to maybe give you something else. For Parker, that'd be the fifth, sixth wide receiver, right, at this point in time. For Robinson, that's no better than the fourth running back on the depth chart right now. But give you something else on special teams besides I'm the guy. For Parker especially, second kick return maybe. You know, he doesn't have the same kind of athleticism that Keelan Robinson has.
Right, and can they come up with one or two plays a game where they can utilize his speed on
some
offense?
Kind of gadget,
because
something.
He is a fast little, you know, one of those fun little guys that can really move. Hey, look, good chance he didn't make the football team, right? It's just the way it is,
that's
right?
So absolutely.
I wish all these guys the best. I hope they all play up to their potential, whatever that happens to be. I hope they all make the squad. I hope the Jags win the next 15 Super Bowls. Chances are all those statements will not be true, right? And so, you know, just fight it out now. You're here. Welcome to Duval. And I hope you all hit your ceilings. And if you're not happy with it, that's okay. You know, you're entitled to your opinion. I hope no matter what we think about it today, we, you know, like Mason Smith, maybe you had another guy, even at his position that you would have had. I had many people. Why didn't they take this guy? Well, they like Smith better. That's why. I mean, you don't have to agree. But the consensus said that it doesn't matter. They're not drafting by the consensus. They're drafting by the Jaguars brain trust consensus, and we'll find out if the brain trust did a good job. Let's hope for the best. I like it. I'm not going to say I love it. More in the like it to let's see. Let's prove it.
I like it, and I'm hopeful.
I'm hopeful. I like it because they got value in the first round, incredible value, and they – hammered positions of need.
Yes.
Whether they hammered them with the right guys, whether they got the best value all throughout the draft, I don't know. Time will tell. So that's why it's still up in the air right there. And that's okay. You don't have to have a definitive 93.1 grade or 79.6 today.
Yeah.
Let's see how it all goes. Hey, thanks for playing along today. Appreciate everybody who weighed in. Thanks to Tyler Natuno from USA Today Sports Wire's coverage of the LSU Tigers, giving us a little insight. And even he thought, probably a little early, for Jordan Jefferson there. Hey, Jordan, go prove us wrong, man.
Yeah. Go Tigers.
That's right. I love it. All right, that's going to do it for us. You're going to hear a lot of that, I have a feeling, in the days to come. For Tony Smith and Dylan Denmark, I'm Mike Dempsey. We'll be back at it again tomorrow. Have a great day, everybody. Stick around for Helmets and Heels. Coming up next on 1010XL 92.5 FM.